2540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Find out what's going on in the world, the state,
and in your own backyard.
This is a Civic Media Network News Update.
It's 8 o'clock. Good morning. I'm Terry Bell, and here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The ink is dry on Wisconsin's budget, but the battle rages on. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says Republicans will vote again on a $3.5 billion income tax cut. Governor Evers vetoed it and directed tax breaks to the middle class. Voss says the Republican tax cut would have helped everyone who makes between $38,000 and $400,000 a year. Evers says he'll veto any new Republican tax cut bill. A bill in Congress aims to revitalize rural communities which have been struggling for decades. Nadia Ramlagan reports.
The Rebuild Rural America Act, introduced by congressional lawmakers last month, would create a new $50 billion long-term grant program for distressed rural communities. Federation of Appalachian Housing Enterprises President Sarah Morgan says the bill would funnel much-needed resources and support to rural communities facing different challenges.
It's designed to supply the kinds of resources and supports to rural communities that are needed to interrupt cycles of economic decline and population loss.
The legislation also includes launching a Rural Future Corps, a program that would place AmeriCorps fellows in rural communities and help these communities expand critical services. Nadia Ramlagan reporting.
A woman accused of killing a man in Green Bay last year will get a new competency hearing, but not another delay in her trial. A judge yesterday approved a third mental evaluation, but refused to move the trial date. Taylor Shabusiness's lawyers appear to be moving toward an insanity plea. She was supposed to go on trial last October, but the case was delayed several times. Opening arguments are scheduled for the 24th. Shabusiness is accused of killing and dismembering Shad Therian after a day of drug use and sex. You may be surprised to learn there are no federal rules regulating roller coasters in the United States. States only started enforcing roller coaster safety in 1981. Katie DeClark had to wait three agonizing hours before her two daughters were rescued from a broken-down roller coaster in Crandon Sunday.
It's really hard to hear your kid yell your name and you can't help them. You know, they're only 11 and 8, so it's pretty scary for them.
An amusement park industry group maintains roller coasters are safe, with the odds of getting hurt badly at 15.5 million to 1. Wisconsin health officials are turning to the public for ideas on how to use $15 million from the makers of e-cigarettes. That's Wisconsin's share of an out-of-court settlement with vape maker Juul for marketing its products to kids. The money will be paid out over 5 to 9 years. That's what Wisconsin needs to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
For Civic Media News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Here's what you need to know in Southeast Wisconsin. School leaders in Maguanago plan to appeal a federal judge's ruling that invalidated the school district's bathroom policy, which required students to use facilities based on their biological sex. The judge issued a temporary restraining order stating that the policy discriminates against a transgendered student and punishes students for gender nonconformity. The school district's superintendent intends to appeal the decision and maintain their existing bathroom policy. The feds have indicted 5 Milwaukee men in connection to postal worker attacks. Jimmy Casca has more.
The U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin says the suspects have been indicted for their participation in a series of armed robberies targeting mail carriers. If convicted, each person could be locked up for over 30 years.
For Civic Media News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
The Brewers get the W over the Cubs. Good morning, I'm Mike Clemens. The Brewers and the Cubs wrapped up their four-game series at American Family Field with another thriller, 6-5 in favor of Milwaukee. Bottom of the eighth, tied at 5 apiece. Brewers catcher Victor Caratini at the plate. Brian Anderson with the call on Bally Sports Wisconsin.
Caratini, deep fly ball, way back, goodbye! 6-5 Brewers on Caratini's home run!
I asked Karen Tini about the Brewers' reaction.
I mean, every win is important. I mean, we go there and compete and try to win and do everything simple and just try to get there and compete.
The two teams splitting the series 2 games apiece. Christian Yelich making plays, stealing bases, and delivering a 3-run homer in the fifth that made it 4-1 Milwaukee.
You know, try to find ways to score runs, produce runs, and at the time kind of add on to the lead because you don't really know what's going to happen later in the game. And, you know, a lot of wild endings that, you know, for both teams, for them and for us. So in the end, it ended up as a split, and we move on from there, I guess.
Manager Craig Counsell.
Big credit to Christian. I mean, you know, that's a huge swing on a very, very good pitcher, and that's just a big-time player hitting great pitching.
Tonight, the Brewers open a 3-game series against the division leaders, the Cincinnati Reds. NBA free agency continues. Still no word on where the 76ers' James Harden is headed next. A bizarre story from the summer games in Las Vegas. The #1 draft pick, Victor Wembanyama, was walking through a casino with San Antonio Spurs security on his way to dinner when a woman tried to grab him for a selfie.
When I was walking with some security of the team to some restaurant, and there was one person who was calling me, but we talked before with the security, don't stop because it's going to make a crowd. And that person grabbed me from behind. Security pushed her away. Yeah, it turns out it was Britney Spears. I know.
That's right. It was Britney Spears who says she was shoved to the ground. Spears now filing a police report against the Spurs security guards. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News on 540 AM WAUK.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up? This
is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop. Right on.
Join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Looking forward to the weekend. How are you, Earl?
It's the weekend again, man. It seems like a prize, right?
Yeah, it was a short one this week.
Yeah, man.
3-day weeks are shorter.
Hey, but look, Sandy. You're a retired guy.
Mm.
It doesn't matter whether it's Monday or Sunday for you, right?
Or Saturday.
Or Saturday.
Or Wednesday.
How's that feel?
I don't know. It's been quite a while now, so it's hard to remember how it didn't feel. No, actually, I enjoyed work, and I try to do things that are like work. I mean, this isn't like work, but you know, I have to show up at 8, and actually, I kind of enjoyed everything I did as much as I enjoy this. You know, it's a challenge.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Well, it's Sandy Williams. It's Friday. My co-host Sandy Williams is in the studio. Sandy, there's so much going on as always. Sometimes you scrape and scrap to try to find some news. But there's news everywhere now, locally.
In fact, have to scrape and scrap was the vacuum that Donald Trump could fill every day.
If you didn't have any other news, you could always.
It was always that.
Yeah, and that's there constantly.
We have him and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert.
And now we have
Jim Jordan,
and now we have Robin Voss as he is whining and crying and sniveling and saying that Governor Evers lied to him. Is it proper, Sandy, to say that the governor of a state is a liar?
Well,
is that proper? I mean, you were
truth is a defense. If it was true,
yeah.
But I lied. The negotiations I participated in that kind of that level of stuff, and the negotiations over a budget are very complicated. And I'm confident that nothing was explicitly agreed upon that Evers would have backed out on, that anything Robin Voss could now accuse Evers of hedging about.
He said lie. Right?
Well, you know.
That's a strong word.
It's a very strong word, and I'd be very surprised. Politically, it's not a game that people play very much. Although things are so polarized now in Madison that I suspect the level of trust between Republicans and Democrats, particularly in the at the Senate level and with the governor, are probably kind of slim. But no, I don't buy that. You know, I think that that there was some agreement that the Senate was going to pass a budget that said something. Okay, and I'm sure that Evers did not agree that he wouldn't veto it, or he wouldn't have vetoed it.
So Sandy, we do know that Robin Voss and Republicans spent a lot of time. When the governor first puts his budget out, and the legislature picked apart his budget and said, basically threw it in the trash, and said, "We're going to make our own."
Right.
That's exactly what they said. And now when they put theirs together and it goes before the governor, and how can you think that you've thrown his in the trash, that he's somehow going to agree with everything that you put there?
Well, the Department of Administration is the budget building agency, all right? And even the other party the has to rely on the Department of Administration to provide them. They and the Legislative Reference Bureau that drafts legislation. And budgets are complicated, very complicated processes.
Again,
yeah, but they are complicated because they go pretty deep into each agency's expenditures, and they're many pages long. And a negotiation over it tends to negotiate over high points and not every point. And so I'm confident that it's that fact that it doesn't negotiate every point that gives the governor the leeway to use his veto pencil or pen on occasion and on the occasions where there wasn't an explicit agreement. You know, the dynamics, particularly in a situation where you've got a supermajority in the Senate, is that the leverage is pretty limited. The Assembly and Senate are Republican controlled, so the budget that passes is going to have to be something that the Republicans agree with and want, right? So they will probably substantially rewrite whatever the executive proposed budget was from the governor's office. And that's even the case if you've got a mixed legislature. But in this case, it's probably quite true that the budget was probably very much rewritten in the process of what got passed by the Assembly and Senate.
So if that's the case, and it's pretty safe to say it was, then it shouldn't have been a surprise that the governor was going to kind of take his hatchet.
Well, no, but I mean, this definitely would be negotiation because the governor has this partial veto power. He has leverage,
right.
And he particularly has leverage when the Assembly does not have a supermajority of Republicans. So the Assembly can block the override of the veto by simply sticking to party lines on their votes. So there definitely would be negotiation because to the extent that both parties are interested in actually accomplishing something, you would want to negotiate over the things you actually want to accomplish so that you would be confident they would actually get accomplished and not be line item vetoed. So I'm confident that to the extent that that Voss and the Republicans had something they really wanted to accomplish, it was the subject of negotiation. I think that what happened was the Democrats had things they really wanted to accomplish. And the Republicans then said, okay, but if you really want to accomplish that, then you're going to have to trade here, and you're going to have to trade this for that. And so there were things included in the budget at the request of the Democrats that were done in exchange for promises probably that the veto would not be used with respect to certain things.
So
Voss might be accusing Evers of vetoing something that where it was agreed that he wouldn't veto it, but I pretty seriously doubt that.
So nothing unusual about the process that occurred. That's normal process.
Normal process. Yeah. I mean, what's abnormal is when you have a Senate and Assembly that are, and it's happened for quite a while
polar opposites.
We have polar opposites. And that hasn't been the case that often in the history of the state.
So this thing that Governor Evers did, just
where he bought 425 years or 22 or whatever.
I mean, so that's in. Come on, that's not going to happen. I mean,
what do you mean? It's not. Yeah, it happened.
It has to be over. It's not there in perpetuity.
No, that language could get changed in the next budget,
right?
If you had all Republicans in the state house and in both houses, I suppose they'd go and change that. But as it stands, it's in the law and is the law. But you know, budget provisions like this that say that something's going to be in place until a future time period are subject to being changed by future legislatures. And so, you know, it's not really. Almost every governor has used the line item veto, sometimes with tongue in cheek, to accomplish some remarkable things. It's basically there to demonstrate how smart the staff of the governor is in terms of what it is they're able to dream up that they could do. And this one is pretty good.
So for those of us who don't understand the legalese of all of those things, this is not the Republicans. What options do they have? That he's vetoed these things,
they can override the veto, which takes two-thirds vote in the Assembly and Senate. So in the Assembly, though, it'd have to be Democrats would have to vote for it because the Republicans do not have a two-thirds majority in the Assembly,
which is not going to happen.
Which is not going to happen, I presume. So, which means that however, whatever the words are in this bill after the line item vetoes, and you understand the line item allows crossing out, and so far Supreme Court has not overruled the notion that the crossing out can be parts of words, okay? It doesn't even have to be whole words. So what happened here was he crossed out parts of numbers, and he created, you know, a number that was...
He snookered them.
Well, snookered would suggest that he went back on his word.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so...
Well, you're the wordsmith, so I got to be careful with that. But you know, Sandy, it has really infuriated the Republicans, and they can't figure out... And Robin Voss, this made national news, Sandy.
It made national news, I think, because of the ironic nature of the line item veto, which allows this kind of a whimsical approach to crossing out words or parts of words or some words in a sentence and not the whole sentence. And you can really change the meaning. You can turn positives into negatives. You can turn negatives into positives. You can change dates, it turns out. By if there are enough numbers in a row that allow you to cross out some numbers and create a new number.
So now that this has occurred, is it safe to say it's going to probably drum up, what can they do about the line item veto? Can they?
Well, I mean, what they can do is it's a matter of constitutional power.
Okay, moving forward.
Well, I suspect what Robin Voss will do is ask the state Supreme Court to rule on what the extent of the power of the line item veto is.
Which is soon to become a Democratic state Supreme Court.
Well, so yeah, maybe that won't work for them. But that's the only remedy other than amending the Constitution is to get the Supreme Court to decide what the constraints are.
All right, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. That's Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Lindsay Kindert at 540 WAUK The Shaw. At Civic Media, we love our local communities and want to share your stories. Submit your local event and we'll let our listeners know. Email me, Lindsay Kindert, at info@civicmedia.us. That's info@civicmedia.us.
Hi, I'm Mandy Roberts, financial advisor with Thrivent. I'm here to help you assess your finances and find solutions to meet your needs. Let's ensure you have a strategy for success. To get started, call 715-470-1303. That's 715-470-1303.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup.
Yes, that's awesome.
Starting at 6 AM, Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Grave Digger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crute. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show on 540 AM WAUK.
I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S.
Here's your updated forecast on The Shaw. Partly cloudy skies today with daytime highs approaching 78. Easterly winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight. Chance for scattered rain showers, 59. Chance for scattered showers tomorrow. Highs around 77. Partly cloudy. Mainly clear skies Sunday with a high of 81. 88 Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 61 degrees.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crute on 540 AM WAUK.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. It's Friday. It means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. So, Sandy, it's not just that the governor, you know, did that with education. The Republican-led legislature had just about guaranteed this major $3.5 billion tax cut that Governor Evers brought down to $175 million. $3.5 billion to $175 million.
Well, he reduced the tax cut so that it only affected essentially the lowest income brackets. And so what he said was, okay, we're going to lower the tax, but we're going to do it for people who earn, I think it was $36,000 or less was the number. And, you know, that's one of the things, that's the kind of thing that the line item veto was intended for. And I think the answer to Robin Voss there is not the Supreme Court talking about what the line item veto could cover, but the answer to that one to Robin Voss is, yeah, get a Republican elected governor next time if you want to control that problem. Because, you know, their proposal for the tax cuts, I'm confident, was not agreed to by the governor. And the governor was squawking about it all the way to the end, you know, that it was improperly aimed at the wealthiest, and it was unfair, and it was not, you know, not progressive. It was regressive, and whatever. So it was without taking a position on it, which, you know, it clearly was the result of an actual policy dispute, and the governor got the upper hand.
You know, Sandy, you constantly talk about a myriad of things that you know impact and the least amongst the people with daycare and all those things.
Yeah.
The governor put money back in to support the daycares.
Right.
That upset. Yeah, that's the right thing to do, right?
Yeah, absolutely the right thing to do. I mean, you know, to me, the Republican passed budget had so many scratch my head, who are they trying to help? Why are they trying to hurt people with this kinds of things in it? And the most glaring to me was the elimination of the daycare, the $300 million program for daycare for kids, because, you know, every kid that has to be taken out of daycare takes a worker out of the job market. We have a shortage of workers in Wisconsin. The reason they're in daycare is because some parent needs to work or wants to work. you're cutting down the value of the quality of the upbringing of the child by getting rid of daycare. I mean, it's in every way a negative investment in the state of Wisconsin to take out the daycare program, and yet they seem to do it with glee. It's like they were treating daycare like a handout,
right?
And you know, it's not a handout. You know, the American public and the American political process is, I think, failing to take into account the kinds of things that are actually public investments in people and not handouts. So the public health is a public investment in the public's welfare, not in individual welfare. The public's investment in education is an investment for everyone, not for people. It's not a handout. It's an investment. You know, the old Soviet Union used to pay students to go to school. And they did it because there was a clear recognition of the value of education, and they wanted to basically train people in the concept of jobs.
So Sandy, this clearly does nothing to bring the Republicans and the Democrats, the state level, closer together. Governor Evers apparently had clearly no other choice other than to do some of these things, because he basically was forced into a corner.
Well, you know, I think that the public generally, and I'm confident that Robin Voss and the legislature have wanted to think that Evers was a milquetoast, okay?
Yeah.
Easy guy, doesn't like confrontation. Well, he's certainly a very civilized guy. He's not a guy to throw mud at people. He's not not name calling, but maybe he's not a milquetoast. And I think that maybe this budget was an opportunity for him to demonstrate that he could roll up his sleeves and participate in bare knuckle political fighting.
Well, but to say we're never going to work with him again. Well,
they didn't do much. They haven't done much working with him in the past.
Well, we can't trust him. And I'm like, okay, you can't trust him. Let's see. He probably is not going to run again. So I don't think that, you know, this working together with him is going to be something that we can see change.
Well, I think the first thing to figure out is whether, in fact, he really welched on anything or not, or whether Robin Voss is angry because he got one-upped here.
Yeah.
And I think it's my guess, just because in the internals of politics, welching on agreements in politics is not a very common phenomenon, okay? And so my view is that what happened here is that Robin Voss got one-upped. They didn't think far enough ahead to take the steps necessary to make that budget more immune from being line item vetoed, and he got outfoxed. Getting outfoxed is not getting welched. Okay, I think what happened here is he got outfoxed, and an embarrassed guy probably likes throwing mud as a defense.
Listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
this summer.
540 AM WAUK has a new lineup. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show on 540 AM WAUK.
CBS News Special Report. The June jobs report from the Labor Department is just out. The market is still strong despite the Fed raising interest rates by 5 percentage points. CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger on what could happen next.
The jobs data will be a crucial part of the deliberations by the Federal Reserve when it meets for its next policymaking session in July. It is expected that the central bank will increase interest rates by a quarter of a percentage point, barring any major moves on either the employment front or the inflation front.
Again, the June jobs report was just released by the Labor Department. It shows 209,000 jobs were added last month, and the unemployment rate is now 3.6%. That is down 0.1%. We will have reaction and analysis throughout the morning. CBS News Special Report, I'm Wendy Gillette.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
For Civic Media News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Here's what you need to know in Southeast Wisconsin. Aldermen in Milwaukee recently faced public opposition to the proposed new sales tax during a public meeting, with many attendees expressing dissatisfaction. During a public listening session, many were angered by the associated spending limits. Milwaukee is expediting the approval of the sales tax to prevent significant budget cuts or bankruptcy. Some aldermen are discussing the possibility of legal action to challenge the spending restrictions imposed by lawmakers alongside the new tax. Students at Waukesha North and South will be working together next year. The Waukesha School Board says the girls' basketball teams from North and South will combine for a co-op team. A number of other sports have had to combine due to falling enrollment and interest. For Civic Media News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Living happily ever after isn't always a reality. If you're over 50 and are considering divorce, attorney Andrea Gage with the Everson Law Firm can provide the guidance you need. Andrea focuses on silver divorces, the kind that get more complicated over time and present unique challenges. A family, multiple properties, significant assets. Andrea and the team at Everson Law have the experience to protect your interests. Call Everson Law to set up an appointment with Andrea today. It's never too late to be happy. Everson Law, 920-435-3734.
Attention, Wisconsin veterans.
Hello, I'm Tony Evers, the governor of Wisconsin. If you are a veteran struggling to pay for rent, utilities, or other life-sustaining services, I want you to know that the Veterans Rental Assistance Program is here to help. You have already made a most noble sacrifice. You shouldn't have to continue doing so. We are here to support you. The Veterans Rental Assistance Program was created by and for people living in Wisconsin, with benefit approvals being issued to veterans in just days, not months. It's never easy to ask for assistance, but rest assured, we're here to help. You've always been there for us. We want you to know that we're here for you. Call 833-WISVRAP. That's 833-947-8727. Or visit VRAPWI.com. On behalf of the state of Wisconsin, thank you.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. So, Sandy, Ukraine. It's not going away, Sandy. And there's so many things in the news today about different sectors of what's happening in Ukraine. And one of them is, you know, Ukraine wants to speed up their acceptance into NATO. I kind of understand why, right? I mean,
well, there's no question why they would want that. You know, the problem, in fact, I think that Zelensky was just in the Czech Republic saying this. He's making sort of a tour of some NATO countries, talking about what he would like NATO to do for Ukraine, one of them being, hey, hurry up and get us in. If Ukraine was a part of NATO, then the cooperation, the cooperative defense article that dictates the alliance would require that each of the countries take all the steps they would take in defense of themselves in defense of Ukraine, which would mean that boots on the ground in Ukraine. None of the countries have been willing to do that, and they aren't going to now let Ukraine into NATO so that they now would be required to do it. Okay, so that's not going to happen. But the sorry thing is that that this war has gotten to the point where, you know, the potential of a potential outcome is going to be dictated by either the war or diplomacy, and it gets harder to have a diplomatic settlement in the context of a war than it would have been to have a diplomatic settlement reached in a peaceful negotiation, albeit with the threat of Russia's army on the border of Ukraine. But a negotiation at that point in which Ukraine would have negotiated within the and given credence to the hegemony, the power of Russia in that region, and therefore likely would have promised never to join NATO, which was a promise Zelensky, within 3 weeks of the invasion, announced that there was not an interest on the part of Ukraine in joining NATO, okay, that he would agree, right. And he would agree to that. And I think that he would still, in a negotiated settlement, agree that Ukraine would not join NATO in exchange for some kind of determination about how the neutrality of Ukraine would be defended by the rest of the countries, including Russia and NATO. And what's happening now is they're interviewing soldiers or interviewing anonymous officials in Ukraine, all of whom are saying, gee, it's looking a little less likely, like we're going to have a battlefield victory in which we evict Russia from all of Ukraine. So therefore, it seems likely that we'll have a diplomatic settlement. Yes, duh. That was the situation on day one. The diplomatic settlement was the way this war was going to end. And the United States, my understanding at least, has been that we have not been essentially enthusiastic supporters of a diplomatic settlement for Ukraine. And we've told in the publicly what we said is Ukraine has the reins of these horses, and they're going to tell us what kind of settlement they want. But everyone in the world knows that behind the scenes, the United States holds the reins because, you know, we are arming Ukraine and NATO with us, are arming Ukraine. Without that support, Ukraine is a dead duck.
So we've invested well over $200 billion in Ukraine. Just for an idea, the budget of the state of Wisconsin is, you know, what, about $50 billion a year. We've already invested $200 billion in Ukraine. And I was reading this. Donors are war-weary, so Ukraine soldiers get creative for funds. A robust fundraising operation has been critical in supplying Ukraine's military. But as the war drags on, contributions are lagging. So there's less and less resources to support the war in Ukraine. People early on, out of just compassion, mm-hmm. and hating to see what was going on, we're making major donations.
Yeah, I mean,
that's dropped off.
Yeah, well, the notion of real politic, that the Kissinger, the style of international affairs that existed up until the 1990s when the Soviet Union fell apart, and we ended up with neoconservative approach of the United States would exert its hegemony over the world and would spread democracy everywhere. Before that, the notion was that we would recognize the real power and the real interest of the United States, hence real politics,
right.
The real interest of the United States in places, and we would not extend our military support beyond the area of real interest of the United States. Ukraine is clearly not an area of real interest of ours. It's an ideological interest, not a real interest, because it's clear that if Ukraine gets to the point of losing this war, we aren't going to step up our support. We're backing off. That's the political direction. Same thing with Europe. If Europe had a real interest in this, they would be increasing their support, not talking about their interest in supporting it waning as the war drags on and as it becomes less likely that Ukraine is going to be successful. So that's a clear indicator that tells us that we don't have a real politic interest in Ukraine. We have an ideological interest that doesn't extend to our real security interest.
So is it safe to say, Sandy, kind of now, because there was supposedly some belief that when this initiative, this summer push, that we'd see if Ukraine could make the gains necessary of pushing Russia out, that maybe then we'd say, okay, we see some signs, we can keep this thing going. But they're seeing now they're not able to push Russia out of those areas. Do you think it's now a time where, less money coming in from donations, that the United States is going to be one that finally says?
Well, I mean, the fear or suspicion, let's put it that way, the suspicion has been that this is a proxy war, okay, that the United States has Russia involved in a war in Ukraine where we're arming Ukraine. And as Lindsey Graham said, in recognition of the proxy war aspect, this is the best money we've ever invested because we've got lots of Russians dying in Ukraine. And if that's the impetus here, then as the Ukrainians start dying at a faster rate than Russia, then the war of attrition loses its capacity. It loses its legs, right? It's not going to last very long if the attrition starts going the wrong direction. And so, you know, I think that's the concern the United States has, because I think that as long as Russia was losing a lot more men and people than Ukraine, and as long as Ukraine was fighting a war of attrition with Russia that they could sustain, we were willing to participate in that, even if it didn't mean driving Russia out of Ukraine or achieving battlefield victories.
So President Biden still is one who believes that we need to keep supporting Ukraine in this. He's basically going, well, not all in, but he's looking at different ways that we need to keep this thing going, i.e. now with these cluster bombs that he's offering, our nation and the ammunition is an issue now. It's starting to become more and more troublesome for us to give Ukraine the ammunition that they need. So now they're offering these things that have been banned called cluster weapons.
Yeah, cluster bombs. And you know, the cluster bombs end up creating minefields. Only a certain percentage of the munitions that are dropped in these clusters actually go off. And then some of them are planted on the ground as traps for tanks and things that might. So they're like dropping from the sky,
right,
a minefield. You know, we've long talked about the dangers of minefield, and we condemned the war in the Serbians for the
right.
All the mines that they laid in what was Yugoslavia, and there have been hundreds and thousands of people maimed and injured by those mines. We point at that.
Innocent people.
And that's the problem with minefields, is that they last until someone steps on them, and that can happen decades after the war if they aren't discovered. No, I mean, it's a very troublesome thing. My hope has always been that with the bravado with which we speak about supporting Ukraine is designed to bring Russia to the negotiating table. But the rumors from the international theater are that the United States has not been encouraging Ukraine to go to the negotiating table. So I fear that our bravado is maybe based on something else, which is Lindsey Graham's theory of making sure that lots of Russians die on the battlefield. So I think cluster bombs, you know, we used napalm in Vietnam, and all of America knew about it. We weren't, I don't think, in clear recognition at the time that we were essentially violating the Geneva Convention with the use of napalm. And we used it from the sky, and we used it on the ground. You know, we had weapons shooting fire into tunnels that were man-made and held, and we also dropped napalm from the sky.
War is hell, right?
War is hell, and apparently the Geneva Convention doesn't apply any more to us than it does to the limited number of countries that have used cluster munitions, which includes Iran, Iraq, Russia, and the United States.
You know, Sandy, I think that the American people don't really care about this anymore, the majority of the American people. It's not on our radar anymore. And maybe, I don't know, Sandy, if it's because the media is not every night inundating us with photos and all of those things, but the American people is kind of like, okay, if you and I don't bring this up, I don't think there are a lot of people sitting around, Sandy, talking about the war in Ukraine and Russia. I just don't think it matters as much to the American people. I think
the problem is that the exit strategy or the end game has never been something America's been very good about conceptualizing in the context of the use of our military or the use of our military might, okay? And so, you know, the end game in Afghanistan when we armed the Mujahideen, which ended up being, Osama bin Laden, who turned around and blew up a couple of buildings in the United States, that was part of the end game of what we did there. And the end game here is hard to visualize. There are some now commentators who are speculating that if the war goes on and if Ukraine really loses its capacity to fight, and if Russia actually overwhelms Ukraine instead of having a diplomatic settlement, that then the United States will be forced to go to war with Russia over Russia's conquest of Ukraine, which is a horrible endgame, okay? And it's not an endgame that we would have volunteered for at the beginning of this. And if in the beginning of this, we probably would have let Zelensky negotiate on his own with Russia to solve this Eastern European problem, not an American problem.
So, you know, Sandy, I was talking about this yesterday. Mike Pence was saying that he kind of thinks that the American troops will eventually, if something doesn't hurry up and happen, he could see the American troops on the ground fighting Russia because we can't let Russia move. I mean, just a crazy thought, right?
Yes.
I mean, for a guy who's running to win the nomination to think for president of the United States, you know, to even mention that to me is the height of insanity. You would think he would know better. He's former vice president of the United States.
Well, he was former vice president under Donald Trump, and the level of hyperbole that was used during that administration was very high with respect to talking responsibly about international affairs. Remember when we were going to firebomb and create a hell for North Korea or for Iran? You know, I mean, we haven't been one to speak with much restraint.
Listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Attention, Wisconsin veterans.
Hello, I'm Tony Evers, the governor of Wisconsin. If you are a veteran struggling to pay for rent, utilities, or other life-sustaining services, I want you to know that the Veterans Rental Assistance Program is here to help. You have already made a most noble sacrifice. You shouldn't have to continue doing so. We are here to support you. The Veterans Rental Assistance Program was created by and for people living in Wisconsin, with benefit approvals being issued to veterans in just days, not months. It's never easy to ask for assistance, but rest assured, we're here to help. You've always been there for us. We want you to know that we're here for you.
Call 833-WISBRAP. That's 833-947-8727. Or visit VRAPWI.com. On behalf of the state of Wisconsin, thank you.
Hi, I'm Mandy Roberts, financial advisor with Thrivent. I'm here to help you assess your finances and find solutions to meet your needs. Let's ensure you have a strategy for success. To get started, call 715-470-1303. That's 715-470-1303.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Wisconsin's home for daily conversations about the state's latest headlines and stories.
Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times this afternoon, with highs around 78. Winds out of the east, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight. Chance for scattered rain showers. Lows dip down to about 59. Chance for scattered showers again tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 77. A mix of clouds and sun. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 61 degrees.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup. Mondays 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram on 540 AM WAUK.
You can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Since Russia launched its full-scale invasion of Ukraine last year, many Ukrainian military units have relied heavily on donations and charitable funds to supply their troops with much-needed supplies like first aid kits, body armor, vehicles, and even drones. Let's go to the phone lines. David from Mequon. Good morning, David. You say what?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. So, Earl, I know you keep saying it's insanity. You know what was insanity? That we went through two world wars in the 20th century. And we had tens of millions of people that died. What people are not realizing, I'm going to bring this to attention to both of you, because I'm not sure how aware you guys might be potentially with what's actually going on, why Ukraine is actually doing so well against the Russians.
We know why they're doing well. They're being armed by the United States.
No, they're using the most advanced artificial intelligence, which is essentially, you know, they're using robots and computers to fight the battle. And all you have to do, Earl, I'm just telling you, this is a fact. I'm not telling you a lie. I'm not being some conspiracist or anything like that. Type in Ukraine and artificial intelligence. That is a whole new state of warfare that we are now seeing in the battlefield, which we have never seen before. This is a game changer that will have an impact on every single human being.
So David, where did they get the finances?
Well, I think, I mean, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal talking about this as well. I mean, I'm confident that AI is being used. And Ukraine, like Russia, has always been a country filled with hackers. You know, half of the hacking crimes that occurred in the United States in terms of having identities stolen were done by Ukrainians. So Ukraine is filled with very ingenious capacity for both computer usage and, I'm sure, now artificial intelligence applications. I'm pretty sure that Russia, as it wakes up to the difficulty of the war, will be using its own capacities in that regard. But I don't know what, but yes, that might be why Ukraine is doing well. I mean, they couldn't do well without munitions. You know, knowing what the enemy is going to do is one thing, but then being able to resist it or defeat it on the battlefield is the second thing. So the AI helps you strategically, but it doesn't really help you otherwise. It does help you with drones, but I think the use of drones has become quite equivalent on both sides in the war. So we had that conversation, but then what? You know, does that prolong the war? Does that increase the likelihood that Ukraine will prevail in the war? Or does it just simply indicate that it'll be a long-term stalemate and that that a diplomatic solution will still be the ultimate outcome?
So can I respond?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So basically, what changed the Second World War was using nuclear bombs. That ended the war with Japan. They thought, okay, we're going to do this. That immediately ceased everything that which Japan had was shooting for.
Well, incidentally, the evidence now is that Japan was already in peace negotiations before the dropping of the first bomb in Hiroshima.
Okay,
The bombs are what sealed it, though, because they couldn't believe their tremendous power that they had with one bomb killing, a couple hundred thousand people instantaneously, essentially.
So your point, David.
So, but do you think AI is going to have the same effect as the nuclear bomb in terms of shifting power from once? And you think it's shifting power to the side of Ukraine?
Right now it is, because Russia does not have that same technology as Ukraine does. They're actually ahead of Russia as far as one of the things that we've noticed. I think we kind of figured that Russia, they are a military power, a huge one. However, they're antiquated. They have very old equipment and it's not working the way it should be. They have been using some new technology, but you saw what happened with the Wagner Group. They shot down one of their most,
Dave, you're almost acting as if the United States involvement with the AI that we haven't played a role financially. I mean, Ukraine is not.
Of course we have, but Ukraine is taking it to a whole new level. And like I said, I've been reading the articles on this, not just the Wall Street Journal, but many different types of articles. I've been studying this because I've been curious myself as to, okay, here we are a year plus later, and Ukraine has been pushing back, even though the military might of Russia is substantially larger. It's like David versus Goliath that you're seeing, okay? So how is David, AKA Ukraine, able to push back against Russia? And so in reading all these articles, and you're looking, and people have been warning about this forever, and even at the U.S. federal level, what would happen if AI becomes more powerful and what have you? And it's scary, because at the end of the day, when you're using drones or you're using computers and everything, you literally don't even need to send men in the battle. You just send in, these robots and drones and everything else to do the dirty work for you.
So that's what I'm saying is
this is a new level of war that we're seeing, that we're experiencing, that we're just starting to get to understand.
Well, I don't disagree that AI is going to play a big role in military in the future. It surely will, and it's beginning to play it in this theater. But still, the capacity to use it requires that you have weapons, whether it be man-controlled or AI-controlled, that you have the munitions that can then employ the intelligence. And there's a drone shortage developing on both sides, actually. Russia had to reach into Iran to supplement its drone capacity. But I think you're right about AI, David. I just don't think that you're right, that it's going to be the factor that's
the game changer.
The game changer, yeah.
All right, got to go to the break. We'll come back on the other side, 844-967-2789. Be right back.
this is Lindsay Kindert at 540 WAUK The Shaw. At Civic Media, we love our local communities and want to share your stories. Submit your local event and we'll let our listeners know. Email me, Lindsay Kindert, at info@civicmedia.us. That's info@civicmedia.us.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup.
Yes, that's awesome.
Starting at 6 AM, Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crute. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show on 540 AM WAUK.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.